Hello, welcome, Katerina, and thank you so much for taking some time this afternoon to be part of this beautiful interview. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much. I would love for you to tell me or tell us a bit about yourself, what you're doing, your name, and what your passion is.
Yeah, great. That's a good start. So, my name is Katerina, and I am an Ayurvedic practitioner and also a homeopathic practitioner. And I also teach yoga. And so I've been in clinical practice for about 8 or 9 years now, I think it's been, and teaching for about that long as well. And I work with a range of different people in health and wellness, predominantly focusing on mental well-being, but also on physical health as well, and the interplay between the two. And so my business name is called Conscious Living, and I've been working with people here in Melbourne, but also across Australia and now across the world as well, seeing so we're on this very much online world these days. It makes for easier reach with a range of different people across the globe.
Amazing. And yeah, when we had a bit of chat before, you said that like pretty much your important message in the world or to get out is pretty much helping people, that understanding that healing takes time and patience and commitment and change, and that like society sometimes does not give us the space and opportunity to have this time to heal. So, do you want to tell a bit about this? And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that I've just sort of observed over the years of working with of a range of different people that have various different lifestyle backgrounds and life backgrounds and experiences and jobs and family structures. And something that I have noticed is that we're living in this modern world that is constantly pushing us to strive and strategize and set goals and just push, and also look for very quick results. So even in the complementary therapies world, we are still seeing this kind of reductionist approach to medicine, where it is and to well-being, where people are really still looking for a quick fix, even though they're looking towards herbs or supplements or any other kind of non-allopathic therapies. They're still applying the same sort of approach of, if I do this or if I take this, then that will resolve my ailment. But really, what we need to do in order to, or where I see the greatest outcomes in healing is when people put in a great deal of work and discipline and commitment to their health and well-being. And it just requires effort, really. And that's sort of the side of well-being that is, I guess, not as it's not as marketable in that sense. And so one of the things that I help people in understanding is that when you reset your whole priorities around what is important when it comes to not only health but your life itself and what you prioritize, and you really focus in on that and you put the effort in and the commitment in, then you'll see really positive results. So that's something that I'm passionate about in speaking with the individuals that I work with, but also with people in general, in that we have to change our way in prioritizing what is important and what we can fit in into our daily life, and really getting back to just observing nature and realigning with our circadian rhythms, and you know, knowing what is healthy for our individual body and mind, and not necessarily, you know, what is currently you know, the current fad in well-being. For everyone, it is something different. And one of the other things that I've very much noticed as well is that, you know, a lot of people that think that they're actually healthy are not. And so, you know, just because one buys organic food or, you know, is eating a, say, plant-based diet or something like that, doesn't necessarily mean that they are healthy. And so we have to sort of really look at what defines health and what defines total health for each individual.
Yeah. So why do you think society can't give us the opportunity to heal as much as we possibly would need to?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, we've sort of built this societal machine. Collectively over many, many, many years. And it's difficult to come out of that. You know, we're working, you know, we're sold this idea that you can have it all, right? And so everyone is striving to do exactly that, to have it all. And they're burning the candle at both ends and they're pushing their limits. And what they come to realize when they do have that light bulb moment at the end is that something's got to give, and that something will end up being health. And then trying to get back on track after that is a lot more difficult, because you're having to then, you know, reset a whole new way of viewing your 24-hour clock. And this is part of the problem, is that we cram way too much in to our 24 hours. And what we are cramming in is not necessarily serving us either. And so then when you try to add some more healthy routines, or you're adding in, you know, better meals, just as a simple example, you know, to cook a freshly prepared simple meal, doesn't have to be a complex situation, but just a freshly prepared meal, you know, most people say, I don't have time for that. And so it is a collective situation that we're trying to climb out of. And it's going to take time to really change society as a whole. And I'm not quite sure whether that's even possible in our lifetime. But what we can, where we can make changes, is within ourselves. So if each of us as individuals, you know, if we re-look at, you know, what is a priority, and if I can't change what is going on out there, can I change something within myself? Can I change something within my life? Can I reprioritize or re-look at something in a different way that is going to help serve my health and my well-being?
Yeah. It's so interesting. I feel there is at the moment some sort of a shift where I feel a lot of people thinking about it, and there have been lockdowns, and out of a sudden you're with yourself and you might question yourself, you know, on, oh, wow, now I'm really confronted with myself, and I do all these things, but do they actually serve me? And yeah, what you say is like, it's, we have become really busy, and I feel nearly the present situation really shows you how quickly this can be taken away from you, and, you know, like, hopefully gets you back to yourself. So where would you say one can start to change their life or their habits, or introduce more better habits for themselves that they suit themselves better in their life?
Yeah, look, one of the best and most simplest places to start is to set a healthy routine. And just simply looking at sleep and wake cycles and meal timings. If we just even start there, and those things become non-negotiables for us, that and when I say non-negotiables, you know, we're not working also necessarily with absolutes either. Life happens, of course, and we have to be also resilient enough to be able to flow with that too. So, you know, a special dinner will happen, and a night out with friends will happen, you know, a meal elsewhere will happen. This is part of life. But if we kind of work on like a 80-20 rule, where 80% of the time we're observing a really healthy routine and around sleep and wake cycles and around meals, and then 20% of the time we put that buffer in for, you know, enjoying life also. Not that, you know, I think that's also part of the problem. It's not that setting a routine is not enjoyable. And actually what we might find is that once we change that and get into the habit of setting these routines, that we find that actually this is enjoyable and my life is actually so much easier because I feel good now and I have the energy. But one of the places where people can really start is just doing that 80% of the time that they are ensuring that they're, you know, asleep by 10 p.m., awake by 6 a.m., and that they're setting regular meal schedules. So they're having three meals a day at the appropriate time. You know, what is the appropriate time? It's actually a lot earlier than we think that it is. And, you know, this is changeable for different people, different seasons, and you know, different places around the world, because we have different times of sunset and sunrise each day, and depending on where we are in the world. But as a general, I usually suggest that people have a, you know, breakfast around 8 a.m., a lunch actually somewhere between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m., which is a lot earlier than we think, because at that point, the sun is very strong. And when the sun is at its strongest point, our digestive fire is also at its strongest point. And so we need to be able to put fuel into our digestive system just before that time, so that when it does reach that peak point, there is fuel there for it to burn. And then dinner around 5 to 6 p.m. So we can see already just with these timings how the way in which most of society works doesn't really align with that. The people are eating at their desks, or, you know, skipping lunch altogether because they're too busy, they have meetings, all of these sorts of reasons. And so I suggest to people to just make this non-negotiable. You block this out in your calendar and that becomes a priority for you. And what we find is that we always find ways to prioritize everything else, you know, the deadline at work or the appointment that we need to get to, or, you know, whatever it might be, you know, the social occasion that we simply never say no to, but we say no to ourselves every single day. So it's just, you know, making that mental shift and observing how when you are making those non-negotiables, how good you are feeling by sticking to a regular sleep-wake cycle and a regular meal cycle, and how when you don't, how your health suffers as a result. So that's a really good starting point.
Yeah. So it's partly changing something in the outside of like sleeping and eating, and possibly maybe you can talk a bit about exercises that are that you think are a good idea. Yeah, maybe talk about a bit like movements, exercise, what could be, you know, a gentle way on getting into moving your body.
Yeah, this is a really great one. And actually, interestingly enough, you know, exercise is one of those things that when done at the right time, just like with everything else. It's all about timing, really. You know, when done at the right time for the right person and the right type of exercise, it can have great outcomes. However, what we also see is, and, you know, this is a perfect example. Sometimes people, you know, they're slogging out at the gym or, you know, doing quite a lot of exercise to, for example, lose weight. And they find it's not shifting, or it's stubbornly shifting. It's, you know, it's they're not getting much result, even though they're really, you know, putting the effort in there. And that's a perfect example of how sometimes exercise can actually be contraindicated for an individual as well. And there are various different assessments that we do in order to be able to assess whether exercise is appropriate for that person in that given moment. Does that mean it's never appropriate? No, we just clear a few other things first and then apply the exercise. And then what we find is that the result is much better. So exercise is one of those things that, you know, whilst it's very, very important for people to move, if someone is in a state where there is a lot of metabolic waste in the body, that metabolic waste needs to be cooked up or shifted first before we then apply the exercise. But if someone is in a generally healthy state and there isn't that metabolic waste there, then again, it would be dependent upon the individual. So for some people, strength training is what is needed. Their body needs to just get stronger in the musculoskeletal system. For other people, it's you know, something more like a high-intensity interval training may be more appropriate. For others, just starting with walking, you know, getting out there and walking. This is when we're talking about exercise, of course. But there are other ways in which we can also move to affect our general well-being and our state of mind, which is a whole different category as well. And what we see in this category, which I don't call exercise, but rather these are practices in which work directly with your state of the state of your mind and the field in which your mind is. And that includes you know, things like yoga practices, meditation, movement meditation, you know, conscious movements, you know, also walking meditations, things like that. So that category of movement and practice, it really works directly with the well-being of your mind, whereas the other type where we're working with what I would directly call exercise works on the physical body. And all of these are important, but again, as you know, where our conversation sort of started there, it's all about the right type for the right person at the right time. You know, and the right time, not just the right time in terms of you know, that point in their life, but also the right time of the day. So from the Ayurvedic perspective, we always recommend that in most situations that exercise be performed in the morning and not in the middle of the day when the sun is at its strongest point, even if it is winter, and you know, not in the evening when all of our channels are closing and we should be preparing to wind down and go to sleep. And instead what we then do is, you know, go for a run or go and hit the gym or something like that. And we try to open the channels up when the channels should be really closing at that point.
So pretty much you're saying that, for example, if you do interval training or weightlifting or running or things like that, that this should be done in the morning, and then the more mindful and body connective slower movements could also be done in the morning, but should be more like an evening practice where you prepare yourself for, as you said, winding down. It's actually quite a nice picture, like, you know, thinking of, yeah, it's getting dark at night and you just kind of like wind down and yeah. What would you think like about sun rising, sun setting? Do you have an approach on that? Like how people could move with that and support maybe what they want to do with these kind of times?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, with so firstly, probably the one thing that I want to mention there is with the more your mind-based practices or practices that work with the mind and the spirit, you know, they are also practiced in the morning as well. They can also be practiced in the evening. There are certain practices that are specifically done in the evening also. The first thing in the morning is a very special time before the sun rises, which, you know, moves me on to your question here. It's a very special time before the sun rises that we call the Brahma Muhurta time. And this is a time in which the environment is very, very subtle. And the mind is very available at this time. So meditative practices, yogic practices, also studying, very good to be done at this time before the sun rises. So anywhere up to about, you know, 2.5 hours before the sun rises to the point of the sun rising is a very good time to focus the mind on practices such as these. And for those that are studying, this is also a very good time to study. This is a good time to memorize. This is a good time to really engage your mind and allow the wisdom to sink in at that point. And so we have then like the bracket between sunrise and sunset. And so if we look at the, you know, the environment around us and, you know, the power of the sun provides life and energy. And so this is the time that we do most of the things in our day. And so if we look at this time and the movement of the sun between sunrise and sunset, what we see is that around about lunchtime is when the sun is at its peak point. And as I mentioned before, you know, when the sun is at its peak point, that's when our digestive fire is also at its greatest capacity. And so from the Ayurvedic perspective and, you know, looking at the elements in this way and nature in this way, this is when the biggest meal of the day should be, is at lunchtime. And so when we look at what we do, particularly in modern society and Western societies, is that this is actually generally when people have the smallest meal of the day, you know, or if they skip breakfast, then it might be, you know, the sort of second smallest meal of the day or something like that. But generally we eat a big dinner in the West, and that is usually after the sun sets. And at that point, the sun is, you know, no longer, you know, as powerful in the sky at that, in the environment at that time. Now digestive capacity is also lessened. And so this is where we start to then develop really bad eating habits. And we, this over a certain amount of time, we then develop certain ailments for each of us, something a little different. But if we work at having lunch as the biggest meal of the day, in the middle of the day, when the digestive capacity is at its greatest, then we have enough fuel as well. And then as the day progresses and we approach sunset, there is another time just around about sunset or just before sunset where both the body and the mind can get very restless. Usually around that 4-5 p.m. time, our mind can get very restless and our body can get very restless. So this is usually a good time to be able to, you know, go for a walk or do a meditation practice, or, you know, lay down and practice a yoga nidra or some pranayama, something that will, again, bring the mind to stillness. And then, you know, we have the sunset and really that we should be having our dinner before the sun sets, because once the sun has set and it is dark, our digestive capacity also lessens, and we really should be now preparing for sleep at this point. And what we notice is that as the sun is setting, the environment starts to get a lot more subdued. There's darkness, it's a little bit of a heaviness in the environment. And the principle here is that as these qualities flourish in the environment around us, it's also happening within us as well. So ideally here, the mind should start to disengage from the sense organs. Instead, what do? We sit on the sofa, we put on Netflix, we open a bag of popcorn, and we engage the senses a lot more, right? But really what we should be doing is disengaging the mind from the senses and allowing for this natural effect of what we call the tamasic guna to come in. And this is one of three qualities in nature and within ourselves that is a heavy quality. And when that naturally comes in, sleep naturally is induced. And so understanding these principles then helps us structure our day as knowing how to work with the environment, how to work with the elements, and knowing that we are made up of these elements as well. And so, of course, we're going to be affected by them. And knowing how to best work with them helps us to align to achieve better health and well-being.
It's such a good loop to this whole society topic we talked at the start about, because it's like you sometimes wonder, where did we lost this path? When, you know, people 200 years ago, even Indigenous people, they're so connected. And I guess when you have zoomed out of the real life, like, for example, I traveled around Australia in a camper van for 9 months. And because, you know, in the desert, the lights, which in the van, you could not use this unless you had a generator, which we didn't. So we would go out at 4:30 with the sun and would go to bed at like 8 or 9, and it was so amazing. Like it felt like so, you know, you were so in tune with nature, and I think like nature is so in tune with nature still. Like, you know, when you just like at night you sit in the garden, and last night we saw the bats, and my housemate was like, where do they go? And it's like they're just, everything is so in tune, but it seems like humans are the least in tuned anymore. And it's like, yeah, what you say, that people, I mean, it's obviously something that has to do with possibly economy on, you know, keeping economy running, like watching movies, eating chips with it, getting told, well, it's so nice eating chocolate while you watch this with friends and have a glass of wine or something. And when in fact, it's so far away from like human being in a way. So it's really interesting what you're saying. It's so beautiful that you share this, because I think it's great. But I think it's obviously, it takes a lot to understand it and also come back to this, you know. So maybe you can also talk a bit about how you can the mind part, on like how you can support yourself to change your mind to, you know, like keep habits going, and introduce maybe habits that you are also able to actually hold longer than a week. And if you want to share some thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, especially as we're just like, you know, still not quite mid-January yet, you know, people are making New Year's resolutions and all this kind of thing. And you know, and by week two, they're all down the drain. You know, this is an interesting topic, because, you know, the solution is really just to do it, to just be brave as well. Because one of the things that I hear quite a lot with the people that I work with is, you know, I feel like I'm missing out, or, you know, I can't change this because this is the time that my friends get together, or my family eat at this time, or You know, it's just become the thing to do, right? So just be brave. Be the one to make the first change. And what you'll notice is that as things change within you in a positive way, others around you will start to ask questions at that point. Hey, what is it that you're doing? You know, you seem so great. You know, you look great, and you know, your energy feels really good, and you know, you seem very positive. And so, you know, you can become that good example for others to follow. And so there's no real hack around this. That's also the other problem, is that modern society, and part of all of this and part of technology and the speed in which technology is upgrading, is encouraging us to constantly look for hacks, constantly look for a way to shortcut things. 6 weeks to this, 3 weeks to this, or whatever it is. There's a course for everything, you know. You just got to do the course and then you'll get there. And then we find it's not not long standing. You know, we just go back to the same thing. So really the key is to just do it. And to make an effort to understand why you are doing it as well. Make an effort to try to learn the principles behind why you're doing what you're doing. So a lot of the way in which that I work with individuals is through education as well. It doesn't just become, say, a consult where someone comes in and they do an intake and then I give them a prescription at the end and then they go away and they do that and I don't see them for another month or 6 weeks or whatever, and then I come back and we do another quick thing and then it's moving on. A lot of the process is education. You and I had a conversation in preparation for today's chat, and we spoke over email, and you said, like, I think people just don't know, which is truthful, very truthful. You know, we're so far removed from these principles that we just simply don't know. And so when you are working with a practitioner or your teacher, or you come across a chat like this that you hear, make a note and make an effort to want to go and learn those principles. Because when you know why you're doing something, it is a lot easier to then commit to it and stick with it and do it. Because when you fall off the track and you go and do that thing that's not in alignment with the routine or the meal, what you're more likely to do is really observe the effects that that has, and then you don't go and do it again, because something switches. It's kind of like when you know, you just know. You don't have the excuse of ignorance after that. And so learning these principles and, especially if someone's working with a practitioner or a teacher, ask the questions, be eager to learn. If you're, being told to do something, ask why. So that you have an understanding, and then you're empowered, because now you not only have the tools, but you also have like the whole manual behind the tools as well. And that's a lot more empowering for the person. The difficult part in this is that I don't have a hack. I don't have a shortcut. The key is effort. And I think that we have been trying to make things look very appealing. And in doing that in the wellness world, unfortunately, we've just created a lot of illusionary shortcuts that are, that don't work. And so the sooner that we can accept that it's just effort that needs to go in and we just need to do it, then the sooner we can get on with it as well. So just start simply is my key. You don't have to go all the way in and, you know, and just change your whole life overnight, it takes time. If we think about how long we have had a certain ailment for, how long we've been struggling with a certain emotion or mental framework, mental field, you know, it's going to take at least that long to try to resolve it. And so be patient with yourself and be kind with yourself and just do something simple to start with and then build on that simplicity. Because if you just start, you can get going after that, you know. But if you're constantly like procrastinating on it and coming up with the excuses or the negotiations, you're going to reach a point where you won't see any results at all, or you'll go back to, you know, the old habits again. So just start very simply, start somewhere and keep learning, keep being the student as well.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I think it's really good to, yeah, become conscious of your thoughts, you know, and I found it like also sometimes really good, specifically with the internet now. It's like if I feel something, but it might be also sometimes really embarrassing, or you don't know who to talk to who could give you the right answer, you know, because maybe your surroundings are too polite or people don't want to have a deeper talk. It's sometimes really good to just like Google it, and it's like, X, where that, why do I feel this way? What can I do when I feel this way, you know? Or and I found this really good, because apart from that, you get the empathy of people that you don't know, but that there are at least people there that experience the same thing as you. I found this really in the past helpful to start and then to understand yourself, because then you can also, I think the really difficult thing is sometimes depending on how your life has been, where you're coming from, is like actually becoming at all conscious on why you do the things you do, you know. And there possibly also things that you have learned obviously from your family or the country you're coming from that have been kind of branded in you, and you might not even be aware where you learned them or why you do them. So what do you think, like, or what's your approach on becoming actually conscious of your habits? Is it more like that at one point you might feel annoyed about it, that you're doing things, and obviously that's possibly the easiest one, and then you want to change them, you know? But also I guess sometimes to some changes is like, let's say eating, what we're talking about, it's like, okay, you're really annoyed maybe to eat unhealthy and you want to change that, but or you might be overweight, or, you know, you feel really unwell of the things you're eating. It's also, you know, for example, why do I actually eat? Am I like a person that eats when I'm stressed or when I'm emotional? What's your approach on for listeners on how to even become conscious of like your deeper understanding for yourself and you being truthful to yourself on how to understand why you have this habit, why you know, like, why doing things the way you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is such a broad question with like a lot of different answers to it as well, because you know, and it was also the key to everything is to be conscious and aware of and observant of why we do the things that we do. And part of my job is to look for that. It's causation, really. And so a lot of what I do when I listen to clients and their stories and what is ailing them is I look for causation. What is the cause of this? Whether it be something physical or it be something mental, emotional, we are looking for causation, because once we have found the causation to the problem, we can then work on removing it. And a lot of you know, what brings us to a state of unwellness in the first place, other than This is not including, of course, things like accidents and traumas and those sorts of sort of sudden situations. But when something is brewing over a long period of time, it is because we've at some point made the wrong choice and we continue to make that wrong choice. So the first step is really identifying that. Identify that wrong choice. What is it? Am I repeating it constantly? Why am I doing it? Is it because when I was a child, I was constantly told, no, don't do this or don't eat this, or I wasn't allowed this, or I had this experience at school and now as an adult, I keep doing this one thing. So the first thing is to find what that causation is. And that for some people is easy and obvious, and for others, it's a lot more complicated and requires a lot of exploration. So the range here of how we go about looking for that is quite huge. And for some people, they can work with that on their own, just simply being aware, opening their awareness, having the capacity to observe and to be aware and to discern as well. Because sometimes we think that we have, we've recognized something, but really we don't have the discernment there to identify that as the real causation. And it could just be masking something else, but the discernment isn't there to recognize where the truth really lies within all of that. So for some, it might be easy and quick to be able to recognize that, to see it, and then once you have identified it, to just be observant when it's happening. Again, don't be too hard on yourself. Be kind to yourself. Go easy. And just begin to start in a very, very simple way in trying to change that habit. For others, it may be a lot more difficult and you may need to work alongside someone, whether that be a counselor, a psychotherapist, and a practitioner, a teacher. You may even have, someone within your circle that you trust and you love, dearly, and you can trust in sharing, certain things with that person, and they can be objective about pointing certain things out to you. So the approach is a little different for everyone, depending on how deep-seated, that habit is, and then also the willingness to change it as well. And so a lot of the clients that I work with, even though, there's then the connection between knowing that it's there, observing it happening, and making the changes, right, which can be quite varied as well. And so often I hear from clients saying, oh yeah, now I know it. Now I can see it. I can see what's causing it, but I keep doing it. Why do I keep doing it? And it just takes repetition of acknowledging it and identifying it and calling it out when it's there, that at some point, how many times can you put your hand on the hot plate before you recognize, oh, it's hot, I better not do that. So repetition is also very important here, just constantly repeating and acknowledging that that is where the habit came from and how it developed and that it's still there and that more work needs to be done.
Yeah, I think it's just a loving approach. It's just really good to get let there slowly to where your habits are. I think it's a really intimate, vulnerable, situation. So I think it's really lovely how you explain that and how you approach it in your practice. So pretty much your background. I just want to talk maybe a bit about. So you studied Ayurveda and Kundalini yoga and homeopathy. So this is pretty much your and you've traveled a lot and have been with a lot of amazing people around the world and like sucked up all the amazingness from others as well. Maybe you want to share a bit what the you know, if people haven't maybe heard of Ayurveda or Kundalini yoga or homeopathy, maybe you can say a few words on what these approaches are like.
Absolutely. So I work with a number of those modalities, and you're really all of them work in a very similar way in that it is a holistic approach that looks at resolving the cause of your ailments. And so I'm working with someone, you know, purely in from an Ayurvedic perspective, or through homeopathy, or from the yogic perspective, we're always looking at a holistic approach and treating the whole. So for those that are not aware of these modalities, Ayurveda is traditional medicine that has come from the Indian subcontinent. It is one of the most oldest medicines around, but it is also ever evolving. So it has evolved over the years to work with the current times. And so what a lot of people mistake Ayurveda for is, like Indian cooking, or, you know, all of a sudden I have to eat khichdi every day or something like that. And it's completely not that at all. We look at, who you are as an individual, what your ethnic background is, where you grew up, what you grew up eating, where are you living at the moment? It may be somewhere that is not where you grew up or where you were born or where your ancestors came from. And it may have a completely different climate, and you may be in a certain season right now. And so we look at all of those things, and then we develop, a management plan for that individual based on those things. From this approach where we really look at resolving that root cause where we can with individuals. So that's sort of a very quick synopsis of Ayurvedic medicine. Homeopathy is a modality that is a little more recent. It's about 250 years old, and it works with a lot more subtle remedies. As my practice has evolved, I mostly use homeopathic medicine to work with people on the mental emotional realm. So if someone's feeling a little stuck on this realm, then I will bring in homeopathic remedies here. The other area where I use homeopathic remedies quite a lot is in quite the opposite to that, which is in the acute realm as well. So any kind of acute coughs and colds and things like that, I find homeopathy very, very useful for those areas. And then, of course, I utilize yoga and the practice of yoga to help people really connect on a deeper spiritual level. Because we have to align all of these things together. From the Ayurvedic perspective, we say that the total health is bringing in the body, the mind, the spirit, the sense organs, all in a state of equilibrium, as well as ensuring that our digestive capacity is working optimally, that our elimination is working optimally, and that we also have satisfaction and contentment within our mind and within our spirit and within our sense organs as well. And so when we look at health being all of these things, we can see now how giving a singular prescription is never the answer. We have to really dig a little bit deeper. And so I work a little more long term with individuals. At the moment, I'm working in two different ways. One is solely just with myself in helping people align their routines and their diets and their lifestyles. And for those individuals who may have a big pathological history, so there may be certain diagnoses, or they might be on a certain amount of medication, or where the cases are a little bit complex, I work in an integrative way with my Ayurvedic teacher and Ayurvedic doctor. Her name is Jessica Velela, and we work in an integrative way together with clients in a more long-term way to help them resolve their ailments. And so this particular approach offers like a team of people for the individual, which is very, very beneficial because the individual feels very well taken care of in that way. And this is part of where our conversation started at the beginning, in that everything is so fast and so crammed in these days that even our medical appointments are, 10 minutes with our GP, and we walk away with a script, but is anything really resolved? Our main aim is to just really care for people well and to ensure that they get the best care possible.
Yeah, amazing. This is very good. Thank you so much for sharing all your insight and knowledge and wisdom. And is there anything you want to share that I haven't asked, or do you have a message to give to people that listen to this?
I think there's always more to share, of course, but I think we've covered a really good deal. Thank you for having me today and for having this conversation. My message to people out there really is to just put the effort in and be proactive about your health and be eager about change. Because that's where you'll see the results, and that's where you'll be most empowered in your health and well-being, is if you really make the effort, you put the effort in, and you be proactive about making those changes, and find someone that you trust and that you can work with to help you be the best that you can. So that you can live your fullest life.
Amazing. Such good finishing words. So, well, thank you so much. And it was a pleasure to listen to you. So thank you.
My pleasure, Lena. Thank you.